The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So again, good evening and welcome to our second refuge class. And at the heart of the Buddha's teachings and the whole path of liberation the Buddha taught, there is the importance of intention, or intentionality. And it's so important that sometimes I think of Buddhism as a religion of intention, that we look at our intention, and that so much follows in the wake of our intention. Setting our intention, setting the course, setting the sense of what motivates us, has a huge impact on our inner life, our inner psychological life, maybe much more than many people realize. And so in relationship to Buddhist practice, then people can have an intention to practice, an intention to the truth, experiencing truth, being truthful, being true, an intention for awakening, an intention for liberation, an intention for compassion, intention for service. There's a variety of intentions that could be expressed as kind of at the heart of people's involvement with the Buddha Dharma. And so refuge is in part a marking of that intention. At some point people come to a place in their life where it'd be meaningful for them, significant for them, to somehow mark or acknowledge or recognize or be affirmed in having this intention. And I think as many of you probably have discovered, it's very easy to have wonderful intentions, intentions that are profoundly meaningful for you, and if you want to orient your life this way, but then actually doing that is a whole other thing. It's so easy to slip off and get caught up in other things and get busy or whatever. And so sometimes having a ceremony of affirmation or a ceremony that really marks it can do something to the mind or the heart in some deep way that actually helps that turning, helps kind of for us to get kind of more grounded in this is the direction you want to go. So down through the centuries, the refuge ceremony has been the primary way in which Buddhists have marked this intentionality they have. And because it's at such a primary place in Buddhist spiritual life, it's understood in a wide variety of ways. And I appreciate that it's part of the value of this refuge ceremony is that it's multidimensional. And different people enter into the refuge from different dimensions, different angles, different perspectives of what it's all about. One of the things has to do with an orientation. So we're orienting ourselves in a certain way. We're orienting ourselves with the truth, orienting our life along with that which liberates us from suffering or alleviates suffering in the world, helps be of service for others. The Four Noble Truths are at the heart of this, the heart of the heart. We're orienting ourselves to kind of live by the Four Noble Truths. Everything, all of Buddhism follows out of that. So it's an orientation. As an orientation, the tradition talks about it being an understanding as well. Refuge is not meant to be kind of a blind faith. You kind of blindly stumble into the Buddhism and say, well, this is a good idea, and, you know, I'll take refuge. But rather, it's to have some inner, maybe heartfelt understanding of what it's about, what you're doing, and then orienting ourselves along those directions. This orientation, then, is also understood to be a protection. And one of the functions of the refuge is to be a refuge, is to be a protection and a support for us. And there are times in life where it's hard to be motivated, times in life where things are quite challenging emotionally, in all kinds of ways. And it's hard to have the inspiration or the courage or the faith that we can carry on, that there's a way to get through all this. And some people find it profoundly helpful to go for refuge, to be reminded, oh yeah, there's the Buddha, there's the Dharma, the Sangha. There are these wonderful resources, these wonderful examples, these wonderful, powerful symbols, in a sense, that remind us of some larger container, context for our life than our own individual will, our own individual understanding, or even our own abilities. So to be reminded, oh yeah, I can take refuge. I could kind of fall back and be supported in some way is an important part of refuge as well. But along these lines, I want to mention that in Theravadan Buddhism, there's a fourth refuge. And in some schools of Buddhism, the fourth refuge is the guru. And so sometimes the guru has a greater refuge than the Buddha Dharma Sangha, the way people relate to a guru. In the Theravadan tradition, the fourth refuge is yourself. So take refuge in yourself. And of course, it doesn't mean necessarily your neurotic self. But there is something about ourselves. We take refuge in ourselves. We find support in ourselves. We become a light unto ourselves. We become an island unto ourselves. And so there's a way in which we point back to ourselves and to our own capacity and ability to follow a path, our own capacity to figure out what is helpful to do, what's not helpful to do, our own capacity not to add suffering, add difficulties to our life on top of it. And some very deeply meaningful religious way to leave ourselves alone from all the kind of arrows we can add to ourselves on top of ourselves. So I think it's very, very significant to think about ourselves as being a refuge. I find in Theravadan Buddhism and teachings of the Buddha a tremendous respect for the individual for whom there is no self. So the fact that there's all this teaching about not self doesn't mean at all that there isn't a profound respect given to each individual person and their capacities and abilities and all that. The only thing about one of the things about the teachings of the Buddha, the way he taught, he was more focused on what we do or how we live than what we are. Sometimes people in terrible ways focus on what we are, and then they discriminate against each other because how we are. We're born certain ways, and we're kind of put in categories. Or in a more positive way, people can say, "Well, who I really am is I'm divine. You know, I'm like Buddha nature. This is who I am." The Buddha wasn't so much interested in who we are as what we're capable of doing, how we are. And that has to do with choices we make. Choices we make about how we want to live our lives, how we respond to this life. And so it can be very reassuring to be told that you're divine or you have Buddha nature or something. Oh yes, I can just relax. Especially reassuring for people who believe that that they're the opposite. And they need to be reassured and relaxed because they're so critical for each other. But for the Buddha, the idea of what we are wasn't so important, but how we are and how we live our life is important. And so that's up to ourselves. And so to be able to take refuge and have confidence in ourselves, yes, I have this capacity to know what's true. I have the capacity of knowing what direction to go, or I have the capacity of following a path. And it's up to me to find the reference within myself of the Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha. It's not a matter of keeping the Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha external, something outside of you, but rather to have it, to personalize it, or to find it in yourself. So it's not some kind of blind faith to something external, but rather something that you find personally meaningful, maybe unique to yourself. It isn't so much that you're adopting something from the outside, as it is you're discovering something on the inside, and then there's a resonance between that and the Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha. And at least that's the way it's been for me, that as I've practiced and I've changed and grown and developed and whatever through my practice, then I felt a tremendous resonance with the ideas of Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. It's almost as if then I see myself in the Buddha. I mean, that could sound like hubris, but it's something like that, right? That I see something in there. I recognize something in the idea of the Buddha that I see in myself. So in that regard, I want to tell you how I see the historical Buddha. Well, I don't know if historical is the right word, but I'm very inspired by the Buddha. It's very meaningful. It's like, my whole adult life is centered around what he had to teach. So, it's a big figure in my life. But I study his teachings and I try to teach what he teaches and best I can. But how I see the Buddha is I think it's very hard to know who he actually was. The Theravadan tradition says that the Buddha was a person, human being. He wasn't a god. He wasn't some kind of superhuman kind of supernatural person. He's basically he was an exceptional person, but he was a person. But what kind of person was he? And it's hard to know because we don't have records that really tell us very well what he was. However, this is my analogy that's meaningful for me. And the analogy has to do, I started this analogy when we used to meet at in an auditorium in Portola Valley that has linoleum floors, old linoleum floor, square foot linoleum squares. And sometimes we came in Sunday morning to have our sitting group there. They'd had a party the night before, and there was a lot of beer spilled on the floor and, you know, all kinds of yuck and stuff. And it was really, you know, we'd take our shoes off by the door and walk in. It was all sticky. And because they hadn't had a chance to clean up. And so I thought, well, what happened if no one cleaned that linoleum floor for 500 years? And the doors were, you know, so the dust would come in, the dirt would come in, the parties would happen. And slowly over the centuries, the dirt would build and build and build, but people would dance and walk and pack it in, and the heat and the cold, you know, get really baked in there. And it would be several feet thick after 500 years. And it would be really, really thick and really tough. And it had been so long since anybody had ever seen that linoleum floor that no one thought about it. It didn't occur to the person there was linoleum there. But then one individual found out that some ancient records, there's a linoleum floor there. And a person got curious. I'm going to go find out if there's really a linoleum floor there. I'm going to find out for myself. I don't want to believe these old records. And people say, oh, silly, there's nothing there. We would have known. We'd know if it was there, but there's nothing there. And so the person first gets a chisel, but that's too hard for that, and gets a pickaxe, too hard for that. Finally gets jackhammer, and that kind of works, and works in chisel. It works for a long time. It's really tough stuff, all that beer and dirt. And finally, the person's able to clear out, to get down to the floor, and clear out one square foot, one linoleum square, and clean it and see, wow, it's linoleum. Look, 500 years ago they had linoleum. Can you believe it? It has asbestos in it. So they would see this, and it's really beautiful, you know, and shiny. And so that person verified, yes, there was linoleum. There is linoleum down there. Then through inference, the person said, now that I know that square foot is there, I know that I'm pretty confident now that there's linoleum from here all the way to the walls of this building, of this room. So in theory, it's possible to clear out all that guck all the way to the walls and clear out a whole linoleum floor. In theory. Maybe that one person is not going to live long enough to do all that work because it's, you know, jackhammers are expensive and they keep breaking and it's so hard. So it takes, you know, it's a big job. But at least in theory, it's possible to work in that direction. So I think there are people who have somehow touched that linoleum floor of what the Buddha experienced. And the Buddha represents, for me, the capacity of a human being to clear out the floor all the way to the walls so it's completely exposed and beautiful again. So they have the capacity. So I don't know if the Buddha did that. I mean, that's kind of what Buddhism teaches, right? The Buddha, you know, is as purified as you can get. So maybe that's true. Whether it's true or not doesn't matter to me that much. So he's kind of like an archetype or representation for that possibility. And I have complete confidence in the linoleum floor. Boy. What an analogy for awakening. So I have confidence in the floor. It's there. And I have, you know, complete confidence that it's in theory possible to clear it out to the end. And the Buddha for me inspires me and represents that possibility. And it's my job to try to do that. And I don't, you know, we'll see how far I get, you know, in my lifetime. But that's my understanding, you know. So the Buddha represents something. It's a very powerful symbol. It's very meaningful for me. And because to have that as a direction for life, for our life, to make that what makes purpose in life or the direction I want to do, not only seems very, very significant, very noble, very worthwhile, for me, I can't, you know, it's inconceivable to do anything else. It's not a rational thing almost. It's just like it's what nature does. So what is it in you that you've touched? Have you touched the linoleum floor lately? You touched something comparable? There's some experience you've had that is profoundly meaningful for you that gives you some indication that there's something bigger that you can, bigger cleaning you can do, bigger possibility, something you can integrate more fully into who you are and become. And the Buddha is not external, the Buddha is found in yourself. That floor is in yourself, that possibility of cleaning you out is in here. So we take refuge in ourselves to have the capacity to do that. We take refuge in ourselves as support for that, and we take refuge in ourselves that the awakening, the freedom, this purity of heart is found in ourselves as well. So refuge in the Buddha. So Buddha, Sangha, Dharma, and then oneself. So then there's refuge in the Dharma. And the Dharma is a hugely rich concept. And partly it means the Buddha's teachings. And I wonder for you, most of you, all of you have heard Buddha's teachings, have read Buddha's teachings. And I wonder, was there a time when you encountered some of the teachings of the Buddha, Buddha's teachings, that the teaching itself really spoke to you? That, yes, or that really makes sense, or yeah, or something, kind of light bulb went off or something. Has that happened to you, even to a mild degree? What was that like for you? What was it that grabbed you? What was a spark? What was it? Why was it meaningful for you? Or maybe it's something that slowly kind of grew, very slowly over time. Some people are, it's like very slow that it comes, like walking through the fog and mist, and slowly you get wet until you're completely wet. Slowly, slowly, it just makes more and more sense. It's not like a moment. But the teachings, but it's much more than teachings. Dharma is also the one of the significant meanings of Dharma is that it's the laws or the patterns that govern nature. And one of the things we're trying to do in Dharma practice is to live according to those laws or those patterns, to live according to the nature of nature, and not to be opposed to it, not to be in conflict with it. And so the teachings on karma have a lot to do with this law of nature, that in some sense our actions, basic law of nature that Buddhists take very seriously is this law, this truth or whatever, that our actions have consequences. And our actions are consequential. And taking that into account and being serious about that is a very important part of taking refuge in the Dharma. That if you act with greed, hate, and delusion, that's going to be consequential for you. It's going to make a big impact. If you act with generosity and kindness and wisdom, that's going to be impactful in a very different way. And that the choices you make along these two big divides is going to be very consequential in the short term and the long term for your life. And so to take refuge in the truth, in nature, in the patterns of nature, what goes on in nature, is to take refuge in these laws, this unfolding, the consequential unfolding of things, and living as if it's meaningful, as if it's consequential. So taking refuge, aligning ourselves with the Dharma means living in ways that lead us towards wisdom and generosity and kindness, love, and all that. Dharma also means the practices, the whole realm of practices that support us to go as we move towards what the Buddha was talking about. Dharma also means what we experience as we touch the linoleum floor, as we touch the depths of practice that are there. That's also the Dharma. So we take refuge and support in those profound experiences that can happen as well. And we take refuge also in the, you know, I feel a little bit tender around saying profound experiences. It's a little odd expression. It could also be take refuge in the very simple experiences of that when you don't cling, you give up your suffering. You let go of your clinging, you won't suffer. To see that, to see how that works, is to see the Dharma. To see how when you cling, you suffer. And to see how when you let go of it, suffering ends, that is seeing the Dharma as well. So the Dharma has this very rich in other meanings as well. And so as people take refuge in the Dharma, they're connecting to something that's multifaceted, multidimensional, that has great meaning great meaning for the heart, great meaning for our heartfelt engagement in all this. So any questions about that? That kind of presentation about all this? Anything you'd like to ask or say? Okay. So, I would like us to start another process of you getting to explore for yourself what some of these things mean for you. And so what I'd like to suggest is you form groups of three today. And I think it's best, you don't have to, but I think it's nice to, when we do these kinds of little discussions, that you meet with people you didn't meet with the previous week. Just so we get to know more people, get to have more contact here in the group. And sometimes it's good to go and choose kind of people who normally you wouldn't talk to. Don't tell them that when you go choose them. be a little bit subtle about it. you know, every third time choose some kind of person. Every third time, so they think, oh, you know. But just kind of the idea is that. The reason for this is that it's unfortunate, I think, but often people pick and choose and they align themselves with certain people. And it's normal enough, but it's really great in the context of refuge and people taking refuge together to get a sense of our common humanity and common intention and what we have in common and kind of break some of the barriers that maybe between people that might exist sometimes, and even they might be very subtle. So I'm going to ask you to talk about something which you have to decide how much you want to reveal. You don't have to reveal everything that I, you know, everything you could around this topic, because maybe it's too tender for you, or seems, you know, it's something, and then you can modify it a little bit or temper it down or something. But that is talk a little bit about what experience you've had in your life that most resonates with the teachings of the Buddha or the experiences of the Buddha. What experience have you had that is most meaningful for you, that indicates that you're interested in going for refuge? What experience have you had that most kind of confirms for you what this Buddha's teachings is all about? And it doesn't have to be an experience you had in a Buddhist context. It could be that it was some experience you had when you were 7 years old, laying in your bed, and some profound feeling of well-being or peace that you had. And that peace became a touchstone and reference point for your life. And somehow, that's so important, and somehow there's something about the Buddhist practice, the Buddhist teachings, which points back to that, or supports that, or does something. So it doesn't have to be, you know, what happened in meditation or something like that. It can be. So you only talk about what you're comfortable talking about. You don't have to, it doesn't have to be the deepest experience. You know, it could be something that's, you know, you feel comfortable sharing, some experience you have. Does that make sense? Does that make sense enough what I'm saying? And if nothing comes to mind, then maybe the other two people will go first. And then it's fine if nothing comes to mind. That's you don't have to have anything. And then maybe after you've heard the two other people, maybe that sparks something for you. Or perhaps if nothing comes to mind after that, maybe there's some other way, another angle that you want to look at this question that's meaningful for you, or the fact that you don't have an experience that speaks to you that kind of relates this way. Maybe that's an interesting topic to explore a little bit.
And, practice that we've done that maybe really changed us?
I think a practice that's changed you, yes. What I've said, if it's just words, that's not any good. But if you've been changed, so, you know, in some way, so it has to do with some inner change or inner experience in you that, you know, that you've had, so something very personal. So is this okay? So I think what we'll do is take 15 minutes for this, and you have approximately 5 minutes each. And I'd like that each group of three, can you time yourself, have one person be the timekeeper. And that you don't have to use up your whole 5 minutes. You don't have to use up the whole 5 minutes. And by the time your group has gone around all three, no one talked more than 5 minutes though. Once all three of you have talked, then you can have just an open discussion among the three of you and just see where that goes. And then I'll ring the bell in about 15 minutes to bring us back here. Is that okay? Okay, good. Go for it. So you can stay where you are. Minute. So you can just turn around. So I'd like to continue a little bit your conversations with a little different angle on this, and I think maybe you stay in the groups you're in. I think there's one group of two. Is that right? Do one group. Maybe why don't you join another group? So one group of five for this next one. Otherwise, everyone can stay in their group. And this is going to be partly an exercise in being concise, brief. And that is, share with your group in a very concise, brief way, just enough to get the idea across, not some long story, an idea. Of what is it that's challenging about your life? You can say that, yeah. What is it? Well, maybe I was too concise. What is it that's challenging about your life that makes going for refuge meaningful for you? Or makes the Dharma practice meaningful for you? Or the Buddha's teachings meaningful for you? What is it you're up against in your life? Why not just go to the beach? Yeah. I apologize to the beaches. What?
Too much gas.
That could be your challenge. So, So what I'd like to do is to go around. It's also, this is another area that can be very tender, feel very vulnerable. So don't share what you don't want to share. Only share what you're comfortable. But the idea here is share something concise, like one thing. Okay? One concise thing. And then the next person does it. And the next person. And then for the groups of three, we come back to the first person again. And they add something else now. And then you go around and you get to add. And as you hear other people and as you reflect on this and take it in and take in your own life, you might be some new perspective on your challenges come up. Or what is challenging, or what's challenging, you know, what's in relationship to this whole Dharma enterprise, refuge, practice, the teachings, some new perspective, new understanding about what you're up against, why you're inspired to do it, what are the challenges you have. And by going around this kind of hopefully respectful way, just say a little bit, kind of name it, naming something. And then you're going around and you come back to you and you can name it again. Or, you know, not the same thing, but name something else. And then go around and name something else. And it might be interesting to see what comes out of that over time. And we'll just keep doing it for a while until I ring the bell. Can we run? You up for that? Yes. Okay, so wait, just a minute. Let me answer this question before you. Yeah, just a minute. So she has a question, is it the challenges that brought us to practice or the challenges we have now? I was thinking more of the current challenges, but it could also be significant to talk about what the challenges that brought you. So it's up to you, you know. And yeah, stay in the same group except for that group. One group of three, please accept that group of two. In your life, that gives a reason for why the Buddhist practice, the Buddhist teachings, are something you would take refuge in or take into your life to help you. What is the Buddhist practice helping you with? Okay. You know, some people need Buddhism to help them from the Buddhism. So this is the group here tonight. And so I couldn't really even hear the words of your discussion. I was just sitting here watching and getting a sense. It had a nice feeling to me. But anybody want to share a little bit what it was like to do those discussions? For my sake, so I didn't. Yes. Good, I understand. Thank you. I understand that well. Good. Yes?
The commonality of the struggles that we go through, I thought mine were so unique. And actually, in my little group of three, we shared quite a bit of the same kinds of challenges and stuff. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. At first I felt uneasy kind of sharing things, especially when you said some of the intimate experiences we have. But after we began to talk to each other, I felt more relaxed and we were able to share even more than
great, thank you.
I had the experience on that last go around where.
Excuse me, can everyone hear? Okay.
Where it was like going in this I don't know if it was an upward spiral or a downward spiral, but by the time I'd say something and then the next person would talk and the next person would talk, that would be really old information that wasn't really valid anymore. And it had already shifted into, well, that's not really it. And by the time I got to the end, I was sort of, it's a big question mark for me.
So you felt stretched.
Yeah, like at first it was, well, I really want to, you know who I am, you know, in this life, and it went around, and like, well, there's a construct, you know, but, you know, just sort of step that over here for a second.
Go deeper.
Yeah, I already know who I am, that's not it. So I ended up with a big, huge question mark.
Great, that's lovely. Success. Yes, Sonia.
Yeah, I felt an oppression the first 2 hours, and I constantly tap. I'm like, no, I'm going to tap on this. I'm going to tap on this. And the more I listened to my I realized that it's okay to share, and that it's not important what I actually have to say, but just be part of what is said. I mean, because due to the dynamics of the group, things were said the way they were said. And so I personally took a lot from listening, and it definitely changed. Kind of funny, I spoke about this morning, and my perspective, and from my point of view. And I decided that so many things I've been struggling with or challenged me to forget about that.
Okay, thank you. It's nice to hear those things. And so a little bit in talking about these things as little groups of three, little groups, people might have shared things that are pretty intimate, pretty tender. And so in a sense, those of you who heard what other people have to say, you're a little bit, not exactly a custodian of those, but you should treat what you heard delicately, carefully. And probably you shouldn't go around tell other people about it, what you heard was discussed. And also, you shouldn't go up to that person and just kind of gratuitously or too easily bring it up or continue the conversation. You might want to ask them, you know, can we continue this conversation or is something we could share? Or, you know, so be careful how you hold what you heard. I request that. It might be fine to continue the conversation, but make sure that there's a permission. So, I'm going to give a brief teaching before we go around saying names. And a little bit, I'm hoping that a little teaching will also kind of give some focus to the meaning of people introducing themselves here to everyone. And the teaching has to do with, there's a very traditional Theravadan Buddhist chant, which is chanting the 5 or 6, words that describe what the Dharma is. And I want to tell you those words in English. So the first word is the Dharma is well communicated. Or the Dharma is that which is well spoken. Meaning that the Dharma is not something that's complicated and complex. It's something you can communicate hopefully very clearly and cleanly. So ideally. So it's not meant to be something complicated. You don't need a PhD. In Buddhist studies. The other is that it's sanditiko, which means it's readily apparent. The Dharma is something that's readily apparent or immediately apparent, can be perceived here. So again, it's not something that, again, is something so esoteric, but rather something we can see or experience in a very simple way, right here and now. The third is that it is akaliko, which means it's timeless. And this has different kind of connotations, but I think the primary one is that it's timeless in the sense that it never gets dated, never gets old, never gets antique, never gets unuseful. It's always, it's true in the time of the Buddha, it's true for us as well. And that way it doesn't belong to time. The fourth is that ehepasiko, which means that it's kind of in the Dharma is the idea that come and see for yourself. Come and discover this for yourself. There's like an invitation in the Dharma. Come and take a look. Find out for yourself, as opposed to believing it or just understanding it logically or rationally. Come and discern this, see this, experience this for yourself. The next one in the chant is that Dharma is what is onwardly leading. It leads us on. It leads us onwards to greater experience of freedom, liberation. There's a path to be followed, and as we follow that invitation, we follow that discovery, to follow this readily apparent, it leads us on to better things, to greater freedom. And then the last part of the chant, it says that the Dharma is experienced individually by the wise. And individually means that it's something we experience personally, for ourselves, directly for ourselves, we know for ourselves, by the wise. So you have to be wise. So when you're wise. So there is some requirement for you. And you're all wise enough. I have complete confidence in that. So it's what's well spoken, it's readily apparent, it's here in this room with us. Timeless. There's an invitation to come and check it out. We can check out this group, ourselves, what's going on. Here we are. The Dharma is here in this room. And the Dharma is not separate from who we are as individuals. We find it here in ourselves. So, will you say your name?
Alicia.
Lauren.
Kate.
Marcy.
Bill.
Sophia.
Jane.
Sonia.
Monica.
Danny.
Jennifer.
Mimi.
Sue.
Esther.
Manuela.
Ali.
Rick.
Diana.
Vicky.
Les.
Jen.
Loretta.
Barlin.
Neva.
Alec.
Cora.
Elliot.
Simon.
Winnie.
John.
Ken.
Kate.
Linda.
Tickle.
Marianne.
Ava.
Julia.
Gary.
Rashma.
Matt.
Victor.
Kim.
Kathy.
Great. Nice to have you all. And a couple of things. I think these are being recorded, right? My talking. So if you missed last week, or if you missed one of these classes, you could pick it up on Audio Dharma if you like such things. And also, not this last Monday, but the Monday before, I gave a Monday evening talk on the Buddha. And a little bit I was thinking about this refuge class when I gave the talk. So if you're interested in the Audio Dharma kind of listening, you might be interesting as part of this, augment this series, is to listen to that Monday night talk from 9 days ago. So we'll meet here again like this two more times. And then the third, and then after that we'll have the ceremony of refuge, those of you who'd like to do it. And if you're going to do the ceremony, remember you have to come to that fourth class here, because either that or you have to somehow contact me and let me know and get some instructions. So, in other words, it's kind of okay to miss next time. But then, it's a little awkward if you miss the one after that. Anything else needs to be said, you'd like to say, or finish up?
Those of us who missed the first session, we have to be dedicated.
You go into audiodharma.org.
Okay.
And is it, you know if it's up, Victor?
It'll be up by the weekend.
Okay. or approximately. Wait. The previous ones from two and a half years ago?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, you can listen. Dharma never gets timeless, right? Basically the same. So anyway, so that's one option to do if to augment the class is to go back to 2.5 years ago and listen to the refuge series that we did then. What a trip. Yes. That the one I just talked? I don't know how to chant it. I haven't.
Is it like in Pali?
Yeah, in Pali.
It's the right microphone.
So, anybody else know that chant?
I'm surprised.
It's a pretty basic. You know what? Great. Do you want to chant it for us? Thank you. Okay, so travel safely. Thank you.